T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
This show doesn't stink. It's awesome.
I try to discover a little something to make me sweeter. Oh, baby, refrain from breaking my heart.
All right, welcome back. Beautiful Thursday afternoon. Enjoy it if you can. Don't forget, this time tomorrow, we will be just getting started with Festivus Friday. It's brought to you every week by Michelob Ultra Organic Seltzer. It's available now. The airing of the grievances tomorrow at 5 o'clock. A couple of stories to get to real quick. Hikers and hunters could see potential changes coming to a busy wildlife area in eastern Missouri. The Missouri Department of Conservation is investigating after a hiker was mistaken for a turkey and shot Saturday afternoon at the Lewis and Clark Trail near Weldon Springs. Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me?
Yes. Yes, Mrs. Wright.
How does one mistake a hiker for a turkey?
I don't know. But the hiker was mistaken for a turkey and shot in the chest. 47-year-old victim. As of now, the 58-year-old hunter is not facing charges. I thought
he shouldn't be allowed to turkey hunt anymore.
They say they are conducting an investigation. Okay. They're going to initiate an after-action report. Okay.
Maybe we shouldn't have hiking trails along the same areas where we allow the hunting of things like turkeys.
Okay. Very important news here. Caleb Kennedy is out of the top 5 on American Idol.
How will I go on?
Caleb Kennedy is out of the top 5 on American Idol and is now apologizing for a video that shows him with someone wearing a Ku Klux Klan-style hood. Kennedy, who is 16 years old, confirmed his exit from the reality singing competition in a statement on Instagram. He writes, and I quote, "Hey, y'all, this is going to be a bit of a surprise, but I'm no longer going to be on American Idol. There was a video that surfaced on the internet, and it displayed actions that were not meant to be taken in that way. I was younger." You're 16 now, man. "I was younger and did not think about the actions, but that's not an excuse. I want to say sorry to all my fans and everyone who I have let down." And strangely, in the next sentence, he actually did put a G on the end of a word. "I will be taking a little time off social media to better myself."
Okay.
And now this one. This is from the Daily Telegraph in the UK. "The worst ravages of the COVID-19 pandemic could have been avoided had the world not lost a month at the start of the crisis to indecision and complacency, according to the first major independent review of the crisis."
This is the world, not the United States.
Correct.
I want to be clear.
That is correct.
They say we all collectively crapped the bed together on this one.
Yep. The Independent Panel for Pandemic Preparedness and Response, the IPPPR, I want to work on a new acronym, led by two former heads of governments and a host of international experts, says the international health system led by the WHO is clearly unfit to prevent another outbreak and calls for radical reform. The report says COVID-19 was the 21st century's Chernobyl.
So I'm going to read directly from this quote. I think few people would disagree with this quote. And then I want to ask you something, Scott. Sure. February 2020 was a month of lost opportunity to avert a pandemic. Most countries chose to, quote, wait and see rather than take firmer measures that could have contained the virus. For some, it wasn't until hospital ICU beds started to fill that more action was taken, and by then it was too late. We are clearly in this report looking back at the beginning of the pandemic with the 2021 glasses that we are wearing today.
Correct.
If you went back to January, February, March, and Sam looked this up, the first time we mentioned COVID on this program, do you remember the date, Sam, in our podcast?
I will check it out.
And it was
late January.
Late, but it was
it
more
was
like
passing.
More was like, what is this? And they called it Corona. What a dumb. I mean, we just kind of talked about it in passing, and then it wasn't like a huge topic that early.
And I remember we were saying something to the effect of that there was a virus in China.
Right.
We didn't know hardly anything, and I'll be honest with you, and I take no great pride in this. You and I were a little bit flippant about it in the beginning. I think a lot of people were, but we were. And I remember at one point saying, COVID, they're calling it COVID-19. Where do they come up with these names? At which point Captain Encyclopedia comes running in. And he said, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. It stands for coronavirus.
But here's my question.
And the year 2019.
Was it even possible back in February for anyone to really know the train that was crashing down the tracks straight toward us? Epidemiologists, maybe, yes. People who maybe had gone to Wuhan to on the ground to look at things, maybe, yes. But should we have known? Should the world leaders have taken it more seriously? And my only thought is moving forward, if something like this happens, with the same rate of rapidity and the same rate of contagiousness, would the world just not shut down that day? And by world, I mean we would block, I believe, all international travel right then and there, would we not?
And for how long? And there is a fine line, and I'm not saying that it was handled well.
But look at the cost, Scott, of shutting down world global travel versus the total cost that the pandemic took out of everybody.
I understand, but you run a thin two thoughts on that. You run a thin line between public safety and public panic. And then go ahead and shut it down right now when there are 100 confirmed cases in a city in China
that no one had ever heard of.
Let's be honest, population 13 million and none of us have ever heard of Wuhan.
By the way, first big segment we did about COVID-19 was February 25th. First full hour we did on it was the next day. March 9th was our first entire show only about COVID-19.
Okay.
Say it again.
February 25th was
the first big segment.
Okay.
First full hour was the next day, the 26th. And then 2 weeks later on March 9th, we did all
show.
4 hours about COVID-19.
Okay, so for anyone who's watched The Day the Sports Stood Still is an incredible documentary on Netflix, looking back at that day that the NBA said, go home.
It was a Utah Jazz player who had tested positive and they stopped the game mid-game.
I don't remember feeling fear really about this until, not even really for me, it wasn't even really the NBA. It was when the Sprint Center shut
down the
Big 12 tournament. And I remember looking at you saying, oh my God, how bad is this that they're shutting down a multi-billion dollar event?
Well, the problem is, and this is my second thought on all this, and it is easy to look back on 2020 with glasses that say 2021 on them, as you were mentioning. But let's say there are 100, 200, 300 cases of some bizarre flu-like illness in Wuhan, China, and you go ahead and shut down the whole world. And let's say you are effective and successful. Okay? How long until everybody then says, because panic or pandemic averted, how long until everybody says, you totally overreacted, you killed my business, you cost my family thousands
of dollars. But businesses were killed anyway.
But that we know that now.
So here are some of the recommendations. Pandemic simulations are to be run by all member states, read that countries, every year. They want to strengthen the WHO's independence by improving funding. They want to establish a global war chest of $100 billion for emergency response in the event of a new outbreak. And all member states need to name a national pandemic coordinator who are accountable to the highest levels of government.
Okay.
Yeah.
576-7798. 576-7798. If you guys want to weigh in, you're welcome to. They're now, these things will happen. These are after action reviews. That term was used earlier with the hunter who shot the guy who looked like a turkey, apparently, to him. Our first real after-action review is in on the 2020 pandemic.
And we failed.
And it's damning. Damning. 576-7798. Dana, Sam, I'm Scott on KMBZ.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
It's not the end.
6 o'clock TV hour. Don't get caught in four entire
sessions. The first legitimate after action report is in on how the world, not the United States, not England, the world handled COVID-19. And it's from the IPPP, something or other. I don't know. But anyway, they basically say the world lost a month. And had the world not lost that month being February of 2020, we may have been able to nip this thing in the bud. But there was too much trepidation. There was too much dragging of the feet. There was too much stalling.
Of course. And I understand the politicians are thinking, we can't shut down commerce. Are you kidding me? Well, commerce ended up getting shut down anyway. And I think what this report shows is if someone had acted sooner in high places, I don't think it could have been prevented, Scott, because the second all of those people left Wuhan to go back home into New York and the airports, game on. The second everyone left that town. But could we have avoided so many hundreds of thousands of deaths?
576-7798. Let's go to Lee's Summit and bring in Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, how's it going?
Good, go ahead.
Oh, well.
All right. Basically, about February of 2019, we basically have a safety committee. I work for a major corporation, and I brought it up, and I'm like, what are we going to do about this? And it fell on deaf ears. Yeah. And now, all of a sudden, everything went dry. We couldn't get sanitizer. We couldn't get towels. We couldn't get anything.
Let me look back, Jeff, and we'd love your thoughts on this because I'm trying to pinpoint a date. It was in January. It was January 9th, follow me here, that the WHO announced this mysterious coronavirus. All right, so no one's paying attention to this January 9th. I'm sorry, no one is. No one here. January 20th, the CDC says, three U.S. airports are going to start screening for it.
Los Angeles was one of them.
At that point, Scott, I think we were like, what? I don't even know that we would have talked about that.
I think we mentioned it in passing, but again, it was one of those, why are they calling it COVID-19
right.
kind of thing.
On the 21st of January, scientists confirmed human transmission. And on the 23rd of January, Wuhan was now under quarantine. But by then it was too late. As I recall, it was the Chinese New Year celebration, wasn't it? And everyone,
you remember the videos
everyone there was packed in.
Empty streets after that, though?
But they were all allowed to go home. Yeah. And it was, you know, you follow those little cell phone dots where it showed all of those people going back to JFK in New York.
Right. And then it was, I believe, January 31st, if memory serves
was
me right.
Global health emergency.
And I believe it was on that date that the then president shut down travel from China.
Okay. So global air travel was restricted February 2nd. And here's what I'm asking. This report is saying, had we done more in February, the transmission, the cows had already left the barn by the end of mid-January?
Well, a cow had left the barn.
So yes. How do you put that genie back in the bottle, I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, we can sit here all day and say, well, what could we have done? Well, unless you shut down travel before it got out of Wuhan, how could anything have been better than it ended up being?
Well, we could have gone to – some countries did it right. And I'm not saying that – well, yeah, the United States didn't do it right. Who are we kidding? We didn't do it right as people. Transmission rates were low in places like Japan, Taiwan, and South Korea because they wear masks habitually anyway.
Right.
Because for many reasons, not just because of illness,
sure.
For the smog, and it's just part of their culture in many respects that mask wearing is not frowned upon. It's considered normal. I guess if we had gone to mask wearing a lot earlier and started acting in February the way we were acting in June and July of last year, I don't know that we would have stopped it, but we would have minimized it.
And that's the question. To what extent?
I don't know.
Travel. We are a global society. Yeah. And so I'm not saying you don't do a post-op on this and you say, okay, what could we do better next time? What mistakes were made that maybe could have prevented the scale of what it was we saw? But I don't think anyone knew back then it was going to be as devastating as it was. And maybe people way high up in Washington knew, and we just weren't paying attention.
I think there was also some complacency just in not only the American population, but the world population. We had heard about Ebola, but never met anybody who ever had it. We had heard about bird flu and swine flu, but who do you know that's ever had bird flu or swine flu? So here we go again with the World Health Organization saying that we need to be careful. Here comes something else that none of us had ever had any experience or knew anybody who had experience with. It was just another boy crying wolf again. Nicole in Gladstone. Hello, Nicole.
Hi.
Hi there.
So I'm pretty sure the pandemic actually started before they claim it started back in 2019. I mean, wasn't there that flu that was going around? No one knew what it was, how bad it was. Everybody was suffering from it.
Yeah.
Not to mention the World Health Organization in China didn't acknowledge that they had a problem until 6 months after they had a pandemic. So, I mean, really, who's to blame here? Is it, you know, American and European countries for not responding fast enough, or is it for China for not letting the world know that, hey, we have this problem?
Right.
And
couldn't it be both?
And what is the incentive, Nicole, for countries who think they have this issue coming forward and saying we might have an issue?
Human decency?
Well, you would like to think that.
Besides taking the response, the liability and the accountability of the situation, it truly falls on what are their morals. And sadly, we've come to this whole situation has really shown people and companies and everything true colors and a division. It put a line in the sand, and now everybody's trying to pick which side they're on. It never could have been. It didn't have to be this.
Here's the side I'm on. People living. And you bring up an interesting point. You know, who is to blame? Is it China? Is it Western cultures that didn't take it as seriously as maybe we should have?
Don't you think, God forbid, anything like this on this scale happens again? Don't you think people will be much faster to respond?
If it happens soon.
If this
happens again in 25, 30 years?
No.
No.
Especially not if it happens in 100 years.
Yeah. Which was when, we've had pandemics before. You're right,
Sam. Yeah, we're going to be in the history books, and all these people 100 years from now are going to go, look at those people. They didn't go to weddings. They were wearing masks.
What was wrong with them?
They didn't take it very seriously.
Excuse me, what happened to them?
Yeah. Thank you, Sam.
What happened to them? Gosh, Sam. Come on, get with it. 576-7798. He's Sam, she's Dana, I'm Scott on KMBZ.
Well, it's all right. Riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right. If you live the life you please.
All right, welcome back.
Well, it's all right.
We're talking about this report from the Independent Panel for Pandemic Preparedness and Response, the IPPPR. It's the first after-action report on the world's handling of COVID-19, where they found that the World Health Organization was clearly unfit and remains clearly unfit to prevent another outbreak. They're calling for radical reforms. And most importantly, perhaps, in this look back on how we handled this as a world, as the world, the report notes the lost month of February at the start of the crisis, where they say there was indecision, complacency that led to the ravages of COVID-19 around the world. Terry in Prairie Village. Hello, Terry.
Yes.
Hello.
I saw a report on TV that said that some health officials told the White House and some other people in there in October that there was something going on in China, in Wuhan, because they noticed that they were welding up doors and apartments and stuff. And they said there's something going on there that we need to keep an eye on, some disease. And so, you know, that they knew about that in October of 19.
You said you saw this on the news. Do you remember where?
Not sure if it was a 60 Minutes or some other report. They were talking about, you know, these scientists have said,
yeah,
doctors, keep an eye on this thing. And, you know, they said in October, keep an eye on this here because, you know, this could be hazardous to everybody.
And Terry, I even recall, and I don't know if it was COVID or something else, that one of the administrations, and I don't remember how far back it went, they even had a task force on this. Not on coronavirus specifically, of course, but let's do a task force and real world, you know, mock
war game.
War game. And are we equipped to handle this? And if memory serves, the task force came back and said, no, we are not equipped. And these are the recommendations. I mean, this is the problem with task forces and recommendations. This one out today says we didn't do a very good job, but who is interested at this point, with everything everyone's been through, in digging in to policies that could prevent something that might happen or might not happen in 50 to 100 years from now?
Are you saying they shouldn't look into it?
I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm saying they won't.
576-7798. Let's go to Lawrence. I'm telling you, we're number one there. Weston. Hey, Weston.
Hi, Weston.
How you doing, Scott?
Hi, good. Go ahead.
I think one problem that, you know, this question poses is that a lot of people are still having the question, you know, when does this end? Even today, you know, a lot of people I talk to and associate with are like, oh, hey, we're at the 1 year anniversary of the 2 week mask mandate. And here we are still wearing masks. So, you know, if in your guys' opinion, if we're going to do something like this, when does it end? You know, if we're going to shut everything down, are you going to get every single person that had any contact with COVID at all? Because
it's impossible.
Exactly. So, I mean, if you shut something down, when does it end? You know, when you get everybody, at least you can't get everybody, then what are you going to do?
But Weston, let me ask you this. If everyone had masked up right out of the gate, which I understand would have been, first of all, where would you even go to buy a mask in the beginning? But if everyone had a mask and masked up in the beginning, you don't deny that deaths would have been prevented. The issue is getting people to mask up in the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big issue, and it still is even today. You know, even with what data is out there, and I think a big problem with that is just distrust in the government and the media. And I personally think that the media has overinflated this, you know, to a certain extent, and that it's not necessarily as bad as we think it is or did think it was. You know, personally, I'm back to my, other than traveling, pretty much back to my daily life.
Well, and I'm glad for you that you're back to your daily life, but you don't deny that millions have died.
Oh, millions have died, but when you look at the numbers, I mean, the death rate compared to the flu is, you know, it's not...
It was staggeringly higher, Weston.
In what demographic?
In every demographic, it was higher in comparison to the flu, but certainly with older Americans. COVID was the number three killer in the United States in 2020.
Well, did you know that, you know, the flu was down 97% in 2020?
Yeah, because we're all wearing masks.
Do you really think that that's the case, though, that the flu is actually down, or we're just, you know, counting it as COVID?
No, I think the flu is actually down, Weston, because they tested me separately when I went in. I mean, I got a flu test and a COVID test. And I think people forget that in 2017, 70,000 people died of the flu in the United States. Yes. But 2 years ago, was it 19,000 died of the flu? And then we plummeted this year. I think it was 155 hospitalizations in the entire United States. And that was as of a couple months ago. But there is no question that the plexiglass at the grocery store and the masks are helpful in preventing a variety of health issues.
And people might look at me like I'm crazy, but this coming flu season, I am going to put my mask back on. If it can, I don't know why we don't.
Certainly on airplanes.
Yeah. If I'm traveling on a plane in the middle of flu season, I'll wear a mask. I don't want your stanky little halitosis breath in my area anyway.
Well, there's a lot of cultures that have been wearing masks for years.
I don't see myself wearing a mask for years. I'm not going to wear one walking around my house or outside
But nobody's asking you to.
But when I travel, I love the idea of the mask.
I will definitely wear a mask on a plane now, even when this is all over. And let's be honest, it almost is, it seems.
For the sole benefit of not having to smile at people.
Yeah. Or you can't see that I'm telling you to go blank yourself.
He looks so friendly.
Hi, go blank yourself. I'm telling you that through this smile underneath my mask. Let's go to Cameron. Doc. Hey, Doc.
Hey there. Hey, there was a BBC study released in June of 2020, and they were smart enough to review satellite photos of Wuhan, the five major hospitals that went both 2018 and 2019. Their belief is that it probably started in late August of 2019, and they went based on numbers of cars around those hospitals.
Interesting.
And I had heard on some other talk radio months ago that there were lines of ambulances and hearses around hospitals that were in satellite photos. And they also reviewed internet searches, and there was a huge uptake of people searching cough and diarrhea around the same time.
That is interesting.
It's not automatic proof. So I got to think that the world community collectively has got to have some evidence to present when the time is right.
And when will the time be right?
I think they should have been doing something now, you know?
Well, the one thing that this report does, just in my quick reading through it, it doesn't cast blame on individual states, if you will. And by that, I mean countries.
He's right.
What?
Harvard researchers say satellite images show an increase in traffic outside of five hospitals in Wuhan from late August to December, and the traffic spike coincided with a rise in online searches for information on cough and diarrhea. Wow. China says the study is ridiculous and based on superficial information.
Well, then why don't you tell us the truth, China?
But quoting here from the lead researcher, clearly there was some level of social disruption going on well before what was previously identified as the start of the pandemic.
Yeah.
They examined, this is fascinating, Scott.
Well, and sadly, they will never tell us the truth.
They might not need to, because listen, the researchers examined commercial satellite data from outside of the five Wuhan hospitals, and they compared it from late summer and autumn in 2018 to the exact same time period in 2019. In one case, researchers counted 171 cars parked in October of 2018. In 2019, there was a 67% increase with 285 cars and a surge in online searches out of China emerged at the same time.
I'll be darned. Mary in Prairie Village, before we get to a quick break. Hello, Mary.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I was traveling to visit some friends in Washington State for Christmas, and it was early December 2019. And when I was out in Washington State, the friends asked, they said, well, how's Kansas City preparing for this interesting or strange virus that's coming in from China. And, of course, I had no idea what they were talking about. And they went on to say that the governor of Washington State had contacted Washington, D.C., and had asked them for help, you know, financial help, to prepare for this. And Washington, D.C. just said, you know, it's just the flu. It's, you know, nothing to worry about. You know, no big deal. And I guess my question is, when Bob Woodward interviewed Trump, President Trump, then President Trump, and asked him about this, it was sometime in February that he said he knew it was very dangerous and so on and so forth. So I guess I don't know why.
But I think what the report is trying to say, Mary, is there's a difference between maybe understanding that this is dangerous and going to get bad and then enacting public policy quickly that people will follow.
That people won't think you're overreacting. Somebody had a great point on the text line. It's easy to be accused of overreacting. Yeah. It can be proved if you underreacted.
100%.
Mm-hmm. 576-7798, 576-7798. Get to more of your calls, your comments in just a moment. We got to get to the story about the guy who spent 22 years in solitary confinement. He's now fighting to end it, just the practice of solitary confinement. We'll get to that in just a moment here on Dana and Parks.
When you see my face, hope it gives you hell, hope it gives you hell. When you walk my way, hope it gives you hell, hope it gives you hell. Now where's your picket fence, love?
Story here from ABC News. After spending 22 years in solitary confinement, Anthony Gay is trying to make sure no other prisoner in Illinois has to experience the same level of hell that he went through. Gay is the face of the state's Anthony Gay Isolated Confinement Act, a bill developed over the last 10 years that would limit solitary confinement to no more than 10 days per six-month period. It's one of several bills currently in the state legislature. Says Gay, who was released from prison in 2018, the worst part of being trapped in a cell 24/7, not being able to receive social contact and human contact. He represented himself in over 80 appeals before he was able to retain the help of a lawyer. Gay's path to solitary confinement began when he was 20 years old.
Ugh.
He'd been involved in a street fight and as a result was charged with aggravated battery and robbery for stealing a hat and a $1 bill.
Wait, he went away for 20 years for that?
He was 20 years old when he went away for longer than that.
Okay, so I looked this up because off the air I looked at Scott and I go, I don't even think that's legal to throw somebody in a hole for 22 years. But apparently it is. There's a patchwork of these rules around the country. And one of the studies I found, Scott, said that in the 20th century, prisons did this, but it was for 1 or 2 days to correct misbehavior, okay? Mm-hmm. Kind of like a timeout.
And he had gotten into a fight in prison.
And it slowly morphed into this thing where people are spending years in solitary. Critics contend that administrative segregation has never been proven to make prisons safer. And what's worrisome to most psychologists is this. When you are deprived of normal human interaction, and not just prisoners, anybody, mm-hmm. you have a whole host of mental health issues that crop up from that. Anxiety, panic, insomnia, paranoia, aggression, and depression. Why do we allow that?
I don't have a problem with solitary confinement. If it's you, and again, I've never been in prison. If it's used
judiciously,
occasionally, yes. But being in solitary confinement for, you know, maybe a week or a couple of days, don't get into a fight anymore, or we're going to show you what it's really like to be alone without human contact. But 22 years is nothing short of torture. That's torture.
How is it not cruel and unusual punishment?
It is cruel and unusual punishment.
Then why do we allow it?
I don't know, Dana.
Now, the researchers found that the segregated prisoners did show elevated rates of various psychological disorders. However, she cautions that those symptoms are often present anyway in, I don't know, psychopaths who go around murdering people. So it's kind of which came first, the chicken or the egg. Did the solitary make them paranoid, anxious, depressed? Or is it because you murdered five people?
Amazon Air has launched daily flight service to Kansas City in an effort to more quickly move packages to customers. I think I saw them. I think they had two airplanes here because when I was driving into work, I was coming down Shawnee Mission Parkway, and I saw two low-flying airplanes, one right behind the other.
Huh.
And I thought at first they were military planes, but then, you know, upon further examination, I realized they were not. And I had heard the story that Amazon Air was flying into Kansas City today for press briefing stuff. The e-commerce giant's branded Boeing 737-800s touched down this morning at Kansas City International Airport, where Amazon Air has leased 34,000 square feet of space to manage package deliveries. That operation will be managed by their logistics partner, Prime Flight, and is expected to support more than 50 jobs up at the airport. Amazon operates multiple fulfillment centers around Kansas City, including locations in Edgerton, Lenexa, and KCK, where it plans to add 500 jobs at a second facility.
Wow.
Amazon is taking over the damn world. I don't know if I'm happy or mad about that.
Do you know what I'm happy about? If, in fact, they get into the prescription delivery drug business. Because I think that will help drive down costs.
Okay. I'm fine with that. I'm fine. We have to say something just briefly. 67 people were killed in Gaza today, 7 killed in Israel. The UN is warning this conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis could very quickly morph into a full-scale war. By the way, of the 67 people killed, 17 were children. Doesn't say if they were Palestinian or Israeli, but anyway. Okay. Anyway, it's the major news story. Every time you turn on the news, I don't know how you make it a topic without it turning into a "I hate Israel" or "I hate Palestinians" conversation. I'm not going to do that. No.
It's a conflict as old as time.
Well, yeah. And one that for the last 70 years, every major political figure
has tried to fix.
And can't. They hate each other. I don't know what else to say. It's sad. It's unfortunate. They hate each other. Stop hating each other. Get along. Well,
that's good life advice anyway, dear.
Thank you. Just stop hating each other.
Get along. Get along. I love that song. There's a song called Get Along. Get along. Get along. I don't know. It's the only word.
Sounds awful.
Get along.
That's the chorus?
Yeah.
Get along.
Yeah.
Get along.
You know what I'm talking about, Sam?
No.
I don't. But why did the cowboy get a wiener dog?
Why did the cowboy get a wiener dog, Sam?
So he could get along, little doggy.
We got to run. It's almost Friday, ladies and gentlemen. We'll do Festus Friday tomorrow at 5 o'clock. On behalf of our producer today, ladies and gentlemen, the finest man in all of America, the great Sam Stevie III, my good friend and co-host Dana Wright, I am Scott Parks, and God willing, we'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Have a great night. Be safe, be well, and be good.
You'll say the world has come between us. Our lives have come between us. Still I know you just don't care. And I said, what about breakfast to Tiffany? She said,
bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.